consecutive time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Hello there, welcome along to the podcast. It's a big week for Stephen Kenny as Ireland gear up for Slovakia and that big playoff on Thursday. We'll be chatting about that in the company of Stephen Elliott, Paul Corry and James O'Toole. We'll also be chatting about Dundalk and their qualification for the group phase of the Europa League. And Shamrock Rovers, of course, moving ever closer towards the league title. But let's start with that big game on Thursday against Slovakia. Stephen, how are you feeling about it? Are you feeling positive or where is your head at?
It's a difficult one. Obviously, you want to be positive. Stephen Kenny, you know, it's a massive game for us. Slovakia, they've been doing okay in recent times. They've been in and around the big competitions and that. But I don't know. You got to go out there. It's a semi final game, so it's a knockout game. And I think if you look at the last game Stephen Kenny had against Finland, a lot of our lads would have been in kind of pre season mode. So you're hoping. Come this game, there's a lot of lads that have had a little bit more minutes under their belts and they'll be a little bit more sharper come the game on Thursday night. But I think they've got Hamsik back for this game as well, which is probably not ideal because he is their best player by far. So that'd be a kind of negative going in from our point of view. But I'm sure Stephen Kenny is well prepared for the game and he's looked at all their kind of threats and hopefully will be well prepared.
What are you expecting, Paul? Because obviously we've had the 1-1 draw in the Nations League with Bulgaria, then that defeat a few days later at the hands of Finland. He's tried out a few players. He says he's not wedded to any particular system. But do you think he'll go back to some of his more tried and trusted players? When I say his tried and trusted players, I mean tried and trusted players for Ireland of recent times. Do you expect it to be almost more a selection along the lines that Mick McCarthy might choose?
Yeah, you would expect so, Adrian. I would be very surprised if we were to see the likes of Malumbia and Adam Ida start the game. And I think just to touch on what Stephen has said there, we've players who are much more match fit at this moment in time. Those four or five games under their belt. And actually, when you look at the squad, we've a number of players who are playing quite regularly in the Premier League. So I do think he will go with that probably more experienced 11. And we looked quite open at times in the previous two games. And I'm not sure we'll be as expansive in this game. Slovakia, like Stephen Kenny mentioned, a very possession-based team, so there might be a few moments where we just sit in shape and maybe try frustrate them and win the ball high up the pitch. But I think going back to your question, I think we'll see the likes of, I think Seamus Coleman's obviously had injured, but you will see that experience back four that McCarthy used in the tail end and maybe a bit more shored up midfield with the likes of Howerhan and McCarthy. But nothing to fear. I think we can go into this game with hopes. Slovakia aren't a France or an Italy, but it'll be interesting to see what way we set up.
Yeah, James is a little academic now, but the withdrawal of Seamus Coleman after picking up a knock playing for Everton at the weekend. Yesterday at his press conference that Sunday, Stephen Kenny suggested that, you know, he wouldn't rule out entirely playing Coleman and Matt Doherty in the same team. But do you think he might have been thinking along those lines for Thursday's game?
I'm not too sure if he would have, to tell you the truth. I think he's probably got out of jail a little bit where he doesn't have to make the decision now, with Seamus not being there. It's a difficult one when you've got two players of that quality playing in the same position. How do you fit them into the team? But I think Stephen will be over the moon now that he doesn't have to make that decision, that he can just go with Doherty in there instead of Coleman. As Paul said, I think he wants a solid back four, and that's where he'll start. He always does that, even at club level when he was a club manager. His first job was always get his defence, get a solid back four. I think that's what he'll do for this game. He'll just put out a very, very solid back four and then build from that forward.
And in terms of the midfield setup, Stephen, what are you expecting? Conor Hourihan, possibly James McCarthy and Jeff Hendrick. Would that be the way you'd see it?
I think listen to his press conference yesterday, he mentioned James McCarthy. I think we might see James McCarthy start the game. He done okay in the games he came in against in Stephen Kenny's first games. But I think with him playing a lot, he played a weekend again. So he's got, again, like I mentioned, he's got more minutes under his belt. And when he's fully fit, I think he probably definitely plays for me. I think Stephen Kenny has said he's a big admirer of him over the years. And I think he's going to start the game. And you would presume Jeff Hendrick, who's been playing okay for Newcastle, will play alongside him. And of Conor Hourihan, who he's got a little bit more competition for places now at Aston Villa, but you would think he would start the game. Maybe you'd go with them three. I don't think there's going to be drastic changes. I think Stephen Kenny mentioned he's only got a training session and a half, so to speak, to kind of get his plans for the game. With obviously the games being late on Sunday evening, the squad probably will have the first proper training session on Tuesday when everybody's kind of bang out of training. So he hasn't got lots of time to prepare. So I don't think he'll make drastic changes to his starting lineup.
Yeah, and it'll be David McGoldrick, won't it? You would presume Paul bagged a very clever goal for Sheffield United against Arsenal, albeit in a 2-1 defeat, Sheffield United's first goal of the season. He took it really smartly. But you would expect him perhaps to lead the line?
Yeah, I would expect that he will lead the line, and I would probably go with Robinson on one side and Connolly on the other. And I guess when you look at those three, at least all three have contributed goals in the Premier League thus far in the season. And I think Aaron Connolly has looked really sharp. And what you do have alongside McGoldrick there is legs. And I think at times over the last 12, 24 months, we haven't really had that pace or threat where we have pace that can get in behind defences. And when you're playing in a back four, you can't really replicate anything more dangerous than somebody with pace who can get at you and can run in behind. So they're the three I would go for. But I think McGoldrick has to come in for Ida. I think he's led the line quite well for Ireland in recent times, and somebody who, given the fact that he scored in the weekend, should be full of confidence.
But you reckon that Callum O'Dowd, who hasn't played for Bristol City since his last game for the Republic of Ireland, will be edged out by Callum Robinson, who's done pretty well at West Brom, as we saw against Chelsea there a couple of weeks back?
Yeah, I think it makes perfect sense, Adrian, because obviously O'Dowd hasn't played, but Robinson has done really well for West Brom. And I thought that game against Chelsea, if you're thinking that we're potentially going to spend parts of this game out of possession, the way West Brom played against Chelsea that day, counter-attacking football, Callum Robinson probably fits into that system. I guess the one ask that you're going to have of him when he's playing in a wider position is that he's going to have to do some more work going back the way. So maybe not something that comes naturally to him, but if we're talking about winning the game, I would like to see those three start, because I think when they finished the game against Finland, they looked like they caused problems and created opportunities.
James, Stephen mentioned it there a few moments ago. He doesn't have much time, Stephen Kenny, with the players. That's a real problem. I know he says we have to adapt, we have to get on with it. That's just how it is. But, you know, the players arrive, they've all been playing matches, so many of them involved in Sunday games as well. They fly on Tuesday. So he's really got to get his message and his view on Slovakia across to the players in a very short space of time.
Yeah, the Castleknock Hotel was a very busy place last night with FEI cars coming and going from the airport. From a Stephen point of view, he's mentioned as well the likes of Duffy getting games at Celtic. He's in a better position now because some of our players have had good game time since the last game, and they did look rusty during the Finland game. They didn't look great. So I think there's a bit of positivity around the camp with guys as the two guys have said, they're scoring goals and chipping in with assists or goals and stuff like that. So that would be a bit of a bonus. So you expect them to be on a bit of a high. They'll probably get a light training session in today in Abbottstown before they fly off tomorrow. Maybe a recovery session in the morning before they get the plane. But he'll probably have one session out there. So two sessions maybe. One at full tilt. So he has that. But I'm sure Stephen knows who he wants already in the starting 11. It's just a case of getting them gelling for those two sessions.
Okay, well, let's get the Slovakian perspective on Thursday's game. Lukáš Vrablík has contributed for various outlets, including The Guardian, ESPN and 442 magazine. He's been telling me about the feeling in Slovakia about this game.
It's going to be a really important game for the Slovak national team. Of course, there is a big chance to qualify for the Euros, which they didn't manage to do in a proper qualifying round. It's really important for Slovakia to get into Euros, as they have out on the World Cup last time. So they are without major tournament in Euro in 2016. And there is also a pressure on the national team's coach, Pavel Hapka, to do well because he has provided the national team with generation change over the last two or three years, and they expect him now to have results. So it's going to be really a decisive game for him as well.
Talk to us about the pressure he feels he's under, the pressure perhaps from the media or from the general public. Why so? Because he's a relatively new manager, only in the last couple of years, isn't he?
He has taken over in 2018 after some dispute with the previous coach and the Football Association. And he was the coach of the under 21 national team before that, so he has known a lot of younger players. So he put them into the senior national team now and mixed them with key players like Marek Hamšík. So he has had quite an impact on the national team. But now, as I said, it's time for him to do well in key games, you know, to get at the tournament. And if the coach doesn't do it, he's under the pressure automatically. So if he doesn't qualify for the Euros, there is a big possibility he might be replaced, because there was some speculation like that, but it hasn't been confirmed before the game against Ireland in some official way. But there is a feeling among the media and fans that the time has come for him, to have a result finally, because the form has been quite average over the last 1 or 2 years. They have had some good games, but also bad games, so it's important for him now.
You mentioned there Marek Hamšík, and people here will be familiar with Hamšík, primarily because in recent times, I don't know if he still has it, he used to have that Mohican haircut, most recently played for Napoli, now playing his football in China with Dalian over there. The fact that he's made himself available and has travelled for this game, that's a big boost for Slovakia, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. He is the most important player in the national team. Everything goes through him. I mean, he's the main playmaker of the team, and that's the fact for many years. And when he misses in the lineup, it usually is very visible on the wall approach of the team. Because with him on the pitch, also the performance of the other midfielders, like Lobotka, who plays at Napoli now, or Juraj Kucka, a former player of AC Milan, also their performance goes up with Hamšík around them. So without him, it has been really difficult for everyone else to perform. And probably that's kind of dependence on Marek Hamšík, as Sweden had a few years ago with Zlatan, or now maybe Poland has with Robert Lewandowski. So it's very comparable. It's probably the only world-class player in the Slovak national team, even if he plays in China now, but he was probably world-class when he was in Serie A 2 years ago. So, and there has been a problem with quarantine for him when he was in China. That's why he missed the September games against Czech Republic and Israel. And Slovakian team played really bad without him. There was no idea in the midfield. So I would say that with his return to the national team now, the quality of world team goes up. He's also kind of leader in the team as he's a captain. So he's very important on those, he's very important on both playing level, but also as the mental level, you know.
Yeah, but Martin Dubravka, the goalkeeper, unavailable. Is there concern about that, or what's the feeling?
Well, Dubravka became number one goalkeeper like 2 years ago, and he has been great ever since. There was no one like close to him, and the goalkeeper didn't have a chance to push him out from the national team's goal. Of course, he's one of the best players of Slovakia, but now he's injured. The positive thing about it is only that Slovakia has another good goalkeeper in Marek Rodák, who led Fulham to the Premier League last season and now battles for the number one spot there. But he's a good quality goalkeeper. Maybe not on Dubravka's level, because Dubravka is one of the best in the Premier League. But still, it's not as bad as if Hamšík wasn't available. So, of course, it might be a missing link in the Slovakia's lineup. But I wouldn't say that goalkeeper is the concern, because they have had problems on other positions.
Stephen Kenny, the new Irish manager, in the last wee while, he has suggested that Slovakia are favourites for this game. Is that how you see it?
No, not at all. I would say that it's kind of mental tactics from the Ireland coach, to be honest, because when you look at Slovakia's results over the last month, their form, I wouldn't say at all they are favourites now. Also, the mood in Slovakia isn't really positive about the game due to the previous results. You know, people don't really expect Slovakia to win and not to win two games in a row because they haven't managed that very long time ago. So Slovakia are far from favorites. But in my personal opinion, Slovakia and Ireland are quite comparable size when it comes to quality. And also, when we look at the previous games these two teams played against each other, it has always been a kind of a very tense game and with no clear winner. There were only like one goal margins or there were draws and so on. I would say that there is no favorite in this game, and if Ireland's coach says otherwise, I would say that just tactics from him to get maybe the eventual pressure from the Ireland side, but the form of Slovakia's team doesn't indicate them to be favourite.
That's Lukáš Vrablek, a football writer based in Slovakia. The Slovakians, James, they got a bit of an issue because one of their players, the Napoli lad, Stanislav Lobotka, who I know that Stephen Kenny has been very impressed by, he may well be missing because he's involved with Napoli and they're currently in quarantine. They've had all sorts of issues. Their game against Juventus on Sunday night didn't go ahead. It caused consternation in Italy, the fact that it didn't go ahead. But anyway, be that as it may, he may well be missing. We mentioned that Hamšík is coming back. He's a big, big player for them. It's going to be a difficult task for Ireland away from home. And I know that people have been talking about the Premier League at the weekend and the amount of goals scored. But the fact that the game has been played behind closed doors, it's a one-off game, and they won't have the advantage of the home crowd. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you still have to look at it as a very difficult tie. You have to set up as it's going to be a very difficult tie, no matter who they're missing. Like you said, the game versus Juventus turned out to be a bit of a farce. Either way, the fact that Juventus actually were on the pitch waiting for them to turn up and never turned up was a bit of a nonsense around the fixture. But you have to take these games seriously. This is going to be a tight game. We're not going to get high scoring like we saw in the Premiership, especially yesterday. It's not going to be like that. It's going to be a tight. This is a knockout game for a chance at a European Championships. Both teams are going to take it very, very seriously, and it'll be very... I can't see this being an end-to-end game. I think it'd be very, very cagey. Probably a very poor game for the first 20 minutes, if truth be told. But I think Stephen will take that if it's going to be a poor game for 20 minutes and then get something on the counter and maybe nick something in the second half, because that's all you need to do. You only just need to win this game and you're on to the next knockout. As it was, like, these one-off games should well suit the way that Ireland play, because they're very cagey and they can just go and get a counter-attack goal, and hopefully that happens on Thursday evening.
Do you expect it to be cagey, Stephen? Because Stephen Kenny says that Ireland won't be cautious because they have to go and try and win the game, taking on board what Paul said there a few moments ago, that Slovakia are a possession-based team. But do you think Ireland will be a bit more adventurous, or do you expect them to be, as James said, perhaps a little bit disciplined and play for that one goal, perhaps?
Yeah, I think it's the important thing is away from home, you stay in the game for as long as you can, like, because, as you said, it's a semi-final, it's a knockout game, and you just want to be in with a chance right up until even to the latter stages of the game. If it's nil-nil, then I think Stephen Kenny would be happy with that, because we do have pace in our squad going forward now. The likes of Callum Robinson, who is amongst the goals, as we mentioned before, Connolly, who I think has done really well for Brighton all season. But I think over the next few days, it's important for Stephen Kenny. It might be a case of himself, Duffer and Keith Andrews kind of pulling one or two of the lads in the squad away and explain them what he wants from them in the game, how he wants them to play, because he probably won't get that time on the pitch with them in training. So it'll be important for them to kind of little half hour meetings here and there and around the hotel, and you're kind of just putting little pictures in the players' minds what he expects from them to do in the game. And it's not a huge task to go and beat Slovakia. And like we said, they're not absolute world beaters. They're there to be beaten. They haven't been in great form themselves, so I've got confidence with the lads we have in our squad. Again, a lot of them are playing Premier League football and they're well adjusted. They're up to match speed, and we've got a solid back four. Obviously, Doherty is going to probably play at right back now. I think Seamus Coleman getting his injury, I think for me, I was very disappointed, because I think if anybody has watched Everton all season, they'll see Seamus Coleman that's probably playing the best football of his career, probably the best he's played in the last 3 or 4 years, and it's looked like he was bang at it. So it's disappointing from that point of view. I think Stephen Kenny may have been looking back to his captain for this big game, especially with him being the captain. So I think that was a little bit of a disappointing one. But again, Matt Doherty, he's not a bad guy to have there to kind of continue on playing if he does go with him. But no, I think we stay in the game right up for as long as we can. There's definitely goals in the squad. McGoldrick, who likes to drop deep at times, picking up the ball, it'll be good to have an outlet for him, like either side of him, with Conley or Callum Robinson if he plays. And even later on in the game, it might be a case of seeing Shane Long come on, because we all know he can cause havoc for defenders with his pace and energy.
But you're feeling relatively, well, I won't put words in your mouth, I was going to say you're feeling relatively upbeat or optimistic. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think so. I think you look at our squad, and I know it wasn't great against Finland, but again, you can't look too far into that. It was Stephen Kenny's first couple of games, the Bulgaria game and the Finland game. He'll have a little bit more of an idea what it's like on the international scene around the senior setup. And listen, the lads, the big games, we tend to kind of turn up for the big games. And I think we've got a solid back four. We've got midfield that have been playing okay in the Premier League, and we've got players that are strikers up top that are playing in the Premier League scoring goals. So I think you have to be confident. It's a big game, a playoff final place, a place. The winner, if we qualify, we get to play the European Championships in Dublin, which is a huge thing for the country. Hopefully we'll have supporters back in the grounds by then. But no, yeah, I think you have to be confident going into it. And listen to Stephen yesterday in his press conference, he did seem confident.
Are you confident, Paul, so overall?
Yeah, I think we've got a real chance, Adrian. Slovakia are a team who are in and around our level. They finished behind Wales in their group, and they picked up 1 point from their last two games against Israel and Czech Republic in the Nations League. So I think we've got a hell of a chance. I think, like James said, it'll be quite edgy. I think there'll probably be only a goal in between it, but I fancy ourselves to go through.
And James, do you fancy us?
I do. I really do. I think if they go to three that Paul and Stephen have suggested up front, I think the main thing for us to do is when we counter, we need to get the ball into the box as quick as possible. And I think we can nick one. I really do think we can nick one. And that's all we need, is that one. Because I think we can defend out there. So I think positivity, I think we'll go through Thursday evening, yeah.
Would you take a penalty shootout now?
And once it's not like the AC Milan one the other night, well, then I'd be happy.
Come here, we referenced it there a few moments ago, Stephen, the Premier League over the course of the weekend, and not just this weekend, but in recent week, the amount of goals, but a couple of astonishing results. Liverpool beaten 7-2 by Aston Villa. Old Trafford result, Manchester United 1, Tottenham Hotspur 6. What is going on?
Nah, it was unbelievable. You're watching, even it goes far as the same, West Ham beating Leicester. West Ham had got a good result the previous week against Wolves, but see them beat Leicester, like, and actually beat them comfortably, and then obviously yesterday's results, you're sitting there looking at the league table, at the results coming in, and you're just... is it to do with the fans not being at the game, the supporters, less pressure on some of the teams to go out and express themselves? But even Liverpool there last night, they didn't learn their lesson. They kept that high line, and they just kept playing right into Villa's hands. And it comes to stage sometimes, I think, even when you're Liverpool, I was watching the game thinking, are they going to just kind of take the medicine here and drop off a little bit? Because you felt like Villa could have scored at will. And let's be honest, it could have been more than seven. In the end, it could have been 9 or 10. They hit the crossbar. Adrian looked a nervous wreck in goal for Liverpool. And if you're Klopp, you're thinking to yourself, can he be trusted to kind of play the next game? Maybe it could be an opening up for the young Irish lad there. You just don't know. But now it was a crazy weekend all round for the football. But it makes it exciting. Loads of goals. And that's why people say it's the most exciting league in the world to watch, because you never know what you're going to get from one weekend to another.
Paul Curry, you're a man of great intelligence. I'm sure you have a theory and a rationale. Sorry, I'll take that again. I'm sure you've got a rationale or a theory behind all of this. I mean, it's not just this weekend, and obviously those results really stood out, the Liverpool Man U results. But, I mean, there's been so many goals scored. Is it because, as Stephen suggested, that perhaps maybe it's the fact that, you know, there's no crowds at the ground, that things are a little more open and players maybe just are dropping off a little in terms of the edge and the normal match day energy they might have if a crowd was there?
I think so. And it kind of reminds me of, I played probably a few too many under-23s games in the UK, and they tend to be in stadiums with no fans. And sometimes players slip into modes whereby they actually try things that they wouldn't normally do on a match day. And or in a first team match, then if you look at Manchester United, yes, Ian, Eric Bailly or Bailey playing out from the back and the ball, he's tried to play into Matic. I don't think he does that if there's fans in the stadium, because it's just a low percentage pass in a really risky area, and that's leading to mistakes and it's leading to further goals. But it just seems so open at the moment. Everybody is seen to want to play out from the back, and that of course increases the chances of losing the ball close to your own box, and with the quality it's on show in the Premier League, that has led to more goals. But it just seems like a free-for-all at the moment, and no better example in the weekend between the Man U Tottenham game and the Aston Villa and Liverpool game. It's just so open, it's end-to-end, and it just seems to be raining goals.
Paul, Stephen, myself and Adrian, the only time we've gone in stadiums was our old Soccer Republic game at the end of the season. You two have played in big stadiums. Is it a case of that because nobody's getting on a player's back that they're willing to try a stupid thing, or like a fan, like as soon as they make a bad pass, last season for instance they had 40,000 people letting them know they made a bad pass, but yeah, because there's nobody there now, they're willing to just make a silly pass or try a silly trick.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be one of them. Like, if you watch, I don't know if you've watched the game with the crowd noise on or the crowd noise off, but I think if you're watching, I've tried both experience, and I have to say, you should try watching without the crowd noise. It's a really different experience. Even watching the game, it's a bit more real, I think, because you're looking at players, you hear the noise of the ball, and you hear the lads speaking to each other. And going back to Paul's point about when he played 23 football, I kind of understand that a little bit. Like, you go back to when, if I was coming back from injury and you're playing in a reserve game and one of the grounds, and there wouldn't be many supporters there, and there's just not the same kind of hype for the game. Like, even in the dressing room, you're going out, and you know, like, cause nothing can substitute that feeling as a football player when you're going out and you walk out a tunnel and you hear the roar, like, especially before a game, and you know, just before kickoff, especially if you're the home team, you get that big shout from the, listen, a home team will have a song they play before a match, and the kind of crowd sing along to that, and that's just not there at the moment. And it's you can't replicate that in any way. Like, you can't replicate like 30,000-40,000 people being in a ground, or even more in some grounds, and it's difficult for the players. And like you say, if you make a mistake sometimes as a defender, I speak about defenders because, like, generally if they make mistakes, this, something like a goal or a chance often tends to happen. But if you make a mistake as a defender, you know next time that you won't do it, because the crowd will be blamed for blood and they'll be screaming, whereas now you make a mistake, there's nobody really getting on your back, so you're thinking, do you know what, I might try that again, and which is why you're probably seeing, and I know a lot of clubs are trying to play out from the back now with the goalkeepers inside their own 18-yard box, but I just think sometimes if there is a crowd there, that I think the crowd will probably let defenders know a little bit more that, listen, we don't want that, we want to get the ball out of the box, and first and foremost, don't concede. And some of the goals the teams are giving away, it's criminal. You wouldn't see it in a kind of schoolboy game. But I don't know, when will the fans come back? When will we kind of find out for sure if that is the problem? I don't know. It's kind of, I'm getting used to having no fans there, which is worrying.
Could be quite some time. Paul, do you like to watch the matches with the crowd? I know I like watching it without the crowd sometimes, and then say yesterday's game, the United Tottenham game, I watched with the crowd, but I just love the shouting and the roaring of the players just to hear what's going on, and you know, as Stephen said, the sound of the football being cleared.
Yeah, I'm with Stephen on that. I think probably from a playing side of things, you want to see who the communicators are within your squad, and then also what sort of information is being passed from one to the other, because you can hear people, I guess, getting a bit of a telling off from their teammates when things don't go right, or even in just the simple bits of organisation. I think it's nice to see probably that side of different players and who the real personalities are within different squads around the league. And for me, anyway, it kind of gives a bit more of an insight.
And on that, Paul, who has struck you? Who stood out for you? Who's impressed you in terms of their leadership qualities and maybe talking to those around them?
Well, I obviously watched Chelsea with probably a bit of finer eye than other games. And I always think when Jorginho was playing, they look like they're a bit more organised. He's a real sort of dictator. He probably hasn't got the legs to cover the ground. So in one way, he needs to be able to communicate and organise people around him. He's somebody who stands out for me, but I guess then if you flip and you look at Manchester United, yes, it's hard to see a real leader in there, and it's hard to believe how low in confidence people are. And I guess natural-born leaders within that squad are probably lacking. But for me, and looking at Chelsea, I think Jorginho is somebody who always stands out in that regard.
Stephen, for Liverpool, is that just a blip? Just one of those bizarre nights where anything that could go wrong went wrong for them?
Yeah, you could say that, but then I suppose maybe it's been coming a little bit. You even look at the Leeds United first game of the season. They were very open and they conceded 3 goals that night. Could have been a few more even on that evening. So maybe that's something that Klopp has to look at, like regarding kind of his defenders just switching off and kind of not learning from their mistakes. But going back to that one about leadership skill, I think you notice it massively with Liverpool. I think when Jordan Henderson plays and you watch with no crowd noise off, you hear him barking all over the pitch, digging people out, they make mistakes, kind of encouraging people to close down. And yesterday, watching the Liverpool game, you don't quite hear that when he's not on the pitch. And maybe it's kind of highlighted a little bit more how somebody like that is so important, even with all these big superstar players in the likes of Liverpool squad, and he's not around, it makes a big difference to the energy they play with.
And James, I posed the question about Liverpool that maybe that result was a blip, but for Manchester United, it's very, very troubling, perhaps more than just a blip, the way things are at United at the moment.
Yeah, and you have to, I don't know whether you feel sorry for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer or not, like, because the abuse he's taken since that final whistle yesterday is a bit sometimes uncalled for. Like, I know I've seen one commentator mentioning that, is there any other Premier League team that would hire Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? And the answer to his question was no. So, is it a blip? No. We've seen Patrice Evra yesterday get very, very emotional about how poor the game was. Other former players suggesting that the transfer policy at Manchester United is the reasoning behind this. But you look at Maguire, for instance, for the goal where he pulls down Shaw, who's about to kick the ball out. It's just a comedy of errors there at the moment. And I don't know how they actually sort it, because they need to sort it quickly, because Solskjaer is definitely under pressure now.
How do you see the Old Trafford situation, Paul?
Yeah, I don't think the manager is exempt from criticism. They look all over the place at the back, and actually when you think back to their good form of last season, it was when they were actually keeping clean sheets, and I just can't get my head around how it seems anybody within the defence seems to be low in confidence, and the mistakes they're making seems criminal. And I think some of that then has to fall on Solskjaer's shoulders in regards to how the team are setting up or what sort of protection they are given, I guess, as a team and as a unit when they're defending. But they certainly need players. I'm not sure the likes of a Jadon Sancho or a Cavani or whoever that might be that comes in the final third of the pitch is really going to help. So it's a bit of a puzzle at the moment. And I said it from day one when Solskjaer got it, I didn't think he was the man to take Manchester United forward and get them back where they belong. But it's certainly going to be a tricky one to see how it plays out, because there seems to be turbulence all over that club.
Okay, well, certainly at the moment, happy days for Everton. They topped the Premier League table with 4 wins from 4 played. And of course, they got the big Merseyside derby to come after the international break. Also, happy days, James, for Dundalk making it through to the group stage of the Europa League with the victory on Thursday night last over Klaksvík off the Faroe Islands. Super result for Dundalk. And of course, the draw, they got Arsenal, they got Molde of Norway and Rapid Vienna. Things going nicely at Dundalk in terms of European football, whatever. We'll come on to the league and the result against Finn Harps on Sunday, that scoreless draw. But what a draw getting Arsenal, the prospect of taking on Arsenal at the Emirates.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic for them. Hopefully, fingers crossed, by the time they have to play them in the Aviva in December, we might actually be allowed some fans into the Aviva for that game. But it's a great prospect. I actually see them picking up some points in this group as well. And I'm sure if you're a Molde fan, you're like, because when they got knocked out of the Champions League, if they had won through that group, that round in the Champions League, they would have been playing Molde in the next round. So it was obviously in the stars that they were going to draw Molde sometime this European run. I think it's great for them. I think it's great for the league. And I think it's the confidence boost they needed, but they unfortunately haven't carried it through to the league, as you mentioned. But for Irish football, it's great. It increases the coefficient again, which means the clubs can do better in Europe and go in later in Europe. So all round, it was a great result last Thursday night.
Yeah, Stephen, you're based in England, of course, these days. But what have you made of Dundalk and their run to the group stage of the Europa League?
Yeah, I was delighted to see them get through last week, Adrian. I think the manager, he's come in out of nowhere, and you have to say he's done a really good job. And I've listened to some of his interviews and some of his press conferences, and you have to say he's a really likeable guy. So listen to him even speaking after they went through last week. He was just so happy. It was like he couldn't believe his luck, where he kind of got himself to be. And he was talking about potentially getting putting himself up against the likes of Jose Mourinho. So I think he's kind of pinching himself that he's kind of mixing with these type of people. But it's great for Dundalk. Again, it's been a while since he qualified for the group stages again. So to be back in there, like you say, playing against the likes of Arsenal, who are a huge club worldwide. And the only downfall is obviously with the no supporters in the back of your head, you're thinking, will we have supporters back in the grounds, but then we don't know. But it's great for the players as well to put themselves up against some of these stars, and they can kind of really test themselves and see where they are in regard to kind of playing levels and stuff. But like, I agree, I think Dundalk can take points in the Europa League, because it's the kind of one-off games, and you get that little bit of extra adrenaline, I think, for the games. And if you're organised well, you can do well in the Europa League.
I'd say, actually, Paul, he can't believe it. I'm sure he is pinching himself, Filippo Givagnoli, to have guided to talk. I mean,
I didn't want to pronounce his name there, to be honest.
Yeah, of course, the chairman, Bill Hulsizer, saying, you know, almost like Forrest Gump, like, life is like a turtle. You can't get anywhere unless you stick your neck out. And that was in reference to the appointment of Filippo Givagnoli as boss of Dundalk. And he may well be with us for a while now, because pretty much the job is his if he wants it.
Yeah, it's hard to, I guess, not offer him the job given what he's achieved. And we were all probably in shock when he got the job, given his lack of experience and the fact that he was coming from quite an inexperienced background with regards to management, and not exactly a name that stands out in regards to having an unbelievable playing career. But the first time I saw them, they played against Shells in Oriel Park, and I thought there was a zip to their play that I hadn't seen in quite a while. There was probably a confidence amongst a number of their players. And that's essentially what's needed, Adrian, because given the experience that they have in the squad with the likes of Gartland and Shields and Massey and Gannon, they probably don't need a lot of managing. I think they kind of steer the dressing room enough that if you can, I guess, give people the confidence and freedom to play, given the level that they're out in the League of Ireland, they will win the majority of their games. Now, did we ever expect that they'd qualify for the Europa League? Absolutely not. So he must be in dreamland. Now, I don't think it's the best Dundalk squad I've seen in the last number of years. I don't think they've put in unbelievable performances in Europe. They've had a lot of luck in the draw, but that essentially doesn't matter. It's an incredible achievement for the club, for the town, for the league. And I really hope now they invested in the right way and they can get the club back to where they were probably about 12, 24 months ago, because in the last couple of weeks and months, it's kind of felt that the tide was shifting over towards Tala.
James, he has to be very careful now, doesn't he? I referenced that nil-all draw with Finn Harps in the league. They have to really push on and make sure they qualify for Europe next season. And they've got a couple of games in hand, of course, on those ahead of them. So it's certainly within their compass to do that. But losing points at home to Finn Harps, he juggled his team, making 10 changes from the game against Klasvik. So it backfired to some extent on him. He defended his decision to make those changes, but they really do have to try and push on. And the amount of matches they have coming up, it's going to be very difficult for them to cope with it all.
Yeah, I think yesterday was a massive gamble. A gamble didn't pay off, to tell you the truth. There's no point to you being very euphoric and being up in the clouds having qualified for the Europa League if you don't qualify for the Europa League again next year. Like, and they are dangerously close to not getting into the third or fourth place in the league unless they start picking up points. Yesterday was a perfect chance. Get the points in the bag. And then rest players around these Europa League games. Don't rest them like 3 weeks before you start into the Europa League. You need the points in the bag at the minute. Right now, if Shamrock Rovers get one more point, there's no way Dundalk can win the league. They're 18 points behind. They've got 18 points on offer. That's the way it is. Pure and simple, they won't win the league. But they need to qualify in third place to guarantee themselves Europe, because the way the FA Cup is this year, you don't know if one of the top two or one of the top three are going to win it, or be it the top two need to be in that final. So it's dangerous for them to play games like that. You need to get the points in the bag first and then do your celebrating afterwards, basically.
Yeah, very good point though for Finn Harps. 2 points clear of Cork City at the bottom, and they're closing in on Shelburne, who were thumped at the weekend by 3-0 at Tulka Park. Super hat-trick there from Danny Grant. And Paul, Shamrock Rovers rolling on. The margin, it's still 8 points after Bowes won, of course, on Saturday. But on the Friday night, Shamrock Rovers with a comfortable 4-0 win over Sligo Rovers. So while all the focus is on Dundalk and what they're doing, Shamrock Rovers going about their business, clocking up the points and edging closer to the title.
Yeah, indeed. And actually, Adrian, I thought Sligo at times were quite decent in that game, and they played around the Shamrock Rovers press quite well, but it probably shows the gulf in class between the sides and how far Shamrock Rovers are ahead of the majority in this league, that they go out and win the game 4-0. And you only have to look to Graham Burke's goal when Jack pops into the pocket and pings it over the back four, like just whips it from 40 yards and finds Graham Burke in the box. Graham Burke's touch is superb and the finish is even better. And it's just moments of class, and there's so many different ways they can hurt, and they've so many different options within their squad of who they can use at different times. And I think Stephen Bradley has found a formula and a formation that works really well for them, and they look like a really strong outfit, and they look like they're going to go on and win the league. And it would be very difficult to argue against them winning the cup too, because there's just there's a confidence and momentum behind them there that they look so far ahead of the others.
And a couple of other results to mention. A couple of Conor Clifford penalties. Derry City winning by 2-0 against Waterford. That game played on Friday evening. Cork City 1, St Pat's 2. So the problems continue for Cork, beaten at home by St Pat's. In the First Division, Drogheda United 0, Athlone Town 2. Tanner Dogan with a Beckham-esque or a Conan Byrne-esque goal from the halfway line. UCD 1, Bray Wanderers 3. Wexford 0, Shamrock Rovers second team 2. Cove 1, Cabinteely 2. And Longford Town 2, Galway United 6. Bray continuing to set the pace in the First Division, but it is very tight. But James, that Galway result, 2-0 down approaching half-time, and they turned it around to win 6-2.
Absolutely crazy. And you talk about the goal for Athlone and Drogheda at the weekend being the halfway line. I'm sure Conan is raging at home now, having seen that, and now that it's on Twitter as well. But the save from Michal Sligeman in that Galway Longford game, if you get to see that on Twitter, go and have a look at it. It epitomises what's happening at Galway. They're doing really, really well. They're on the edge of getting a playoff now. And the job that John Caulfield's done going in there is brilliant. But we're talking about crazy results in the Premier League over the weekend. That was the craziest one here in the First Division.
Okay, results in the Women's Senior Cup quarterfinals. Treaty United 2, DLR Waves 0, Bohemians 1, Cork City 3, Galway 2, Wexford Youths 3, and PMAD United 1, Shelburne 0. Eleanor Ryan Doyle with the only goal of the game. So they progress to the semi-finals. Just one or two other items just to touch on briefly. James, I don't know if you recall Robbie Brunton, marvellous player back in the day with Sligo Rovers, also with Bowes, load of other clubs, just 47 years of age and sadly passed away in the last few days. I remember him obviously from his days with Sligo Rovers. I never met the lad, but the fans loved him. He was that old-fashioned, rock-solid left-back, would put in a tackle. One of those kind of guys who loved a tackle, hard as nails, great left peg on him, but such a sad loss. And I know he was a regular at Dalyman Park as well. You recall him, I'm sure.
I remember him. I don't quite remember him from his Sligo days. I do remember him from his Bowes days, and absolutely cursing him from the stands every time a player tried to go around him. As you said, he was your typical left full. And he went, you knew you were hit basically when he tackled you, is what several players used to say. Such a nice guy off the pitch as well. I remember speaking to him once, just really, really nice guy. And it's such a young age to pass away at. And everybody, and I know Bowes in particular, they were very, very upset at the news over the week about that passing away.
Okay, well, we extend our sympathies to his wife and young family as well. Robbie Brunton, may he rest in peace. Okay, lads, that's pretty much all we have time for on the podcast. I hate doing this, but I feel I kind of have to go back to the Ireland games. So can we get score predict? Are we all going to go 1-0 for 1-0 Ireland? Is that how we leave it, Stephen?
Yeah, I think that's a safe prediction, I think, Adrian, isn't it? I think anybody would take that result right now. I think just getting through is the main thing. And if, as I said earlier on, we can stay in the game for as long as we can, then Big Duffy pops up with another header last couple of minutes, we'll all take that.
Yeah, could be 1-0 after extra time. We shall see. Paul, are you going 1-0 Ireland?
Yeah, I'll go 1-0 Ireland, the set piece.
You don't sound very convinced.
I would love to say we'll go out and we'll batter them 4-0 or 3-1, but I just don't see us scoring too many goals. I think the way James predicted it earlier, that if we actually get ourselves in front, I think we'll fancy ourselves to hold out from there.
Yeah, James, are you sticking with the 1-0 team?
11-10 on penos.
Yeah, that'd be great. RT Radio and RT Television will be on air till all hours if that's the case.
Well, it means that Enfet can't say yet during Thursday night, so we'll be fine. Just keep it going.
Yeah. We have to wait and see, lads. We just simply don't know as we're recording this on Monday afternoon. We have to see what, you know, Enfet's advice to the government is to go to level 5, in which case football, well, we'd have to wait and see. Anyway, we leave that for another day. Thanks as always to James, and James will be back with me next Monday, and of course Ireland will have played Wales as well as Slovakia by then. Also thanks as well to Paul Carey as ever, and Stephen Elliott. Until the next time, bye bye.